Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I'm hernia-free, Bella Twins promos make me long for the days of the Nitro Girls feud, and I think that anybody that buys that $9.99 t-shirt ought to be strangled in front of their children.
I'm G. John Chase, and I think the Marriage Made in Heaven is the greatest SummerSlam main event of all time. I think ECW December to Dismember is underrated, and my opinion is about as valid and realistic as WrestleMania 7 selling out the LA Memorial Coliseum.
I'm Carl Jones, and contrary to popular belief, I'm actually the life president of the Lex Luger fan club and the patron saint of women's wrestling. And on the subject of women in wrestling, say what you want about Tammy Sitch, but at least unlike the three-man commentary team, she wasn't whoring herself out for Diet Mountain Dew and network subscription.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and apparently since I've last been on one of these podcasts, Christy Hemme has announced that she's pregnant. So disappointing. However, fortunately, there's been another release of those iCloud picks, so the good times roll.
This is the panel for the 14th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us debate the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time. Next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 14th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
How do we do this again?
Carl Jones.
14's Jerry Lawler's age of choice, right?
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Alright.
First of all, to do a little bit of housekeeping, if you listen to us for the first time, you can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Squared Circle Gazette Radio. You can drop us a line at scgradio@hotmail.com. The podcast has been on a 2-week hiatus as I've spent some time in the Sunshine State, but we're back today to talk about the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view in pay-per-view history, which is a pretty interesting topic, I feel. We eliminated WrestleMania from the equation. We like doing these kind of best of. We did the best big man in history a few podcasts ago. We're tackling the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view. I think eliminating the WrestleMania eliminates a few more of the obvious answers that people will naturally gravitate to, because it is
WrestleMania 9.
Well, something 11, you know, I was thinking
6.
Alright, so there's some putrid ones too, but the point is the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time, and I've got to say there's a lot more of a variety than I was expecting when it comes to this. I was kind of in my head thinking about 4, 5, 6 immediate standouts, but the feedback, you guys, as usual...
There's a lot to choose from, isn't there?
There's a hell of a lot to choose from.
Companies. It doesn't just have to be the WWE, does it?
Well, that was...
WCW, ECW, TNA,
which
New Japan.
Which...
I was doing that for the interest of fairness, Carl. Okay, don't choke too much.
Okay, fair enough.
And in the interest of fairness, we are going to... And since the whole point of this is the best, we're actually going to try and break down what makes... the criteria for what makes a great pay-per-view is so different in so many different cases, and I think we're going to kind of discover that with this. But first of all, we're going to go with Kieran O'Rourke's choice. We've all got an individual pick around the table that we're going to try and make our case for in some form or fashion, and Kieran O'Rourke has his pick. Kieran, what do you propose as the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time?
Well, when we're thinking about best of, I think it's really... It's subjective, based on criteria. That's why the correct answer is obviously mine, which is SummerSlam 2002, because it without doubt ticks all the boxes of a criteria, in my opinion, and in, that's an opinion that is correct. look through the card itself is solid, it's deep. Obviously, the main event was Brock Lesnar against The Rock. Really fun match itself, great storytelling. The build to the match itself is done on a sports element to it. It's from a run up and down them steps was it the Orange Bowl, wherever it was?
Yeah, black and the ice bath.
Yeah, the build of Lesnar himself was a monster at that point. I mean, before that, I think they did a little crossover where Brock took out Hogan, who was
murder
Rock,
right.
Who was started off with
the glorious mega job of Hulk Hogan.
It started off with the Hogan. Hogan and Rock is, I think, going for the tag titles. That's when Brock obviously took out Hogan, cost them. They won the match by DQ, didn't get the belts. Then led on to Hogan being destroyed by Brock when was it a bear hug, and he was bleeding from rubbed the blood on his chest. It was just an absolute thing of beauty. And then the match itself, just the build to the actual match was fantastic, and the match delivered as well. I mean, but that wasn't the only match on the card. Obviously, from a personal point of view, if you've listened to any of my previous ones, you wouldn't be surprised to know the kick that I got as Shawn Michaels' return, and obviously likewise Liam. That was, I don't know, as a Shawn Michaels fan, it was, I'm nervous. How is he going to be?
That's the thing. Honestly, looking back from how I was feeling at the time, and obviously how you feel at times is a big deal with in determining the best pay-per-view of all time, the emotion it brings out of you. I remember being so kind of try and distance myself from it almost a little bit. It's like, I don't know what it's going to be. It's probably only going to be one time. I don't know if it's going to be... It's Shawn Michaels, but he's been away 4 years with his back injury. You don't know what he's going
to
be.
I'd say, maybe in retrospect, if we know... I don't... The fact it was 4 years he'd been away, compounded. I think he could have returned before then. Obviously, he still had his personal issues. And he made the first SmackDown appearance, the debut show when he ref that time. Then he was shit canned again. it was
the shit cannings of Shawn Michaels. Yeah,
but not knowing all that in so much detail at the time, it was just that 4 years. I mean, that's a long time.
That is a long time.
So there's a lot, that apprehension. How's it going to be? And he comes out, and he's
That's the word I was struggling for. Apprehension.
Yeah, and it comes out. It's like, this guy. It's such roasting your glasses. I used to think about Shawn Michaels at that time. The great Shawn Michaels if he was still around. And then he comes back and absolutely steals the show.
And you were right.
He steals the show, and he's like. It really introduced us to like the second part of his career, the swan song that really kind of defined his career really more than the first half. And not only that, it also introduced us to his dishevelled cowboy look, which we've all come to love. But I said it wasn't
some more than others.
Well, the interesting thing was that not even from like a standpoint of not Shawn Michaels, Mark. I mean, like I like Shawn Michaels.
Excuse me.
I like Shawn Michaels, but I'm not his number one fan like you two guys are. But I remember at the time. I remember though, still at the time when like Shawn Michaels was coming back, I was like, holy shit, this is pretty awesome. But I was absolutely under the firm belief it was a one time match.
Yeah,
he was going to do a one time match at SummerSlam, as if anything. But the one thing I always remember, I actually never had a doubt that the match was going to be good or not good or anything. I knew it was going to be good. This is the part where I come across probably a complete idiot. For me, when I was watching it, was the absolute believability of I was worried about his back.
Michaels.
Every time,
he's like, the greatest storyteller in the history of
wrestling. Oh, yeah. And this is absolute genius storytelling that he does, because at the time, Triple H is doing the backbreakers on him. He does like that side slam on the chair. And I was wincing all the way through going, I don't think this was a good idea, Sean.
We've been out
with a back, and I fucking bought into it.
Hunter on the table, and he climbs up the top rope, and he does the little.
I'm crazy.
This guy is fucking the man. He's the best timing, the most natural charisma and drama in his performance of anyone. My favourite.
I love you, and even kissing her. Hell, heaven. The end of the match.
But I mean, that wasn't the only match.
This card is so
the first match, the opening match, Kurt Angle in his probably his prime, even though 2 years into his career, unbelievable. Yeah. In his barbershop red and white single against the debut in Rey Mysterio pay per view debut.
His pay per view debut.
Just what a match! I mean, Kurt was gold, and Rey Mysterio's.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that match was only like 8 minutes.
I've got it down in 9:20. I've got it down in my iPad.
Man, that's a great match for 9 minutes.
Yeah, well, I think that was it. If it wasn't, what could they have done if it had gone long? It's fantastic.
I think the fact that it was so short as well meant that they could go at such a quick pace in those 9 minutes. And obviously, the quick pace, you're going to benefit from Ray. You're going to get all the razzle dazzle from him and all the counters and things. It was fantastic.
Quickly with that match is I just remember like watching that match, just being absolutely psyched for it, because I've been waiting for Rey Mysterio to come into the WWE for ages, and just seeing that and how he'd work with someone like Kurt Angle, because obviously we all know Kurt Angle's a great athlete, but it's like, could Kurt Angle wrestle that fast style with Rey Mysterio?
Or would it be a style clash?
But it turns out obviously he can.
Yeah, but also on the card we had Flair and Jericho. They went, I think, 10. Edge and Eddie. Yeah. Van Damme Benoit for the IC title.
Take a test. Never mind.
If I can just jump in quickly, because I'm really curious to get everyone else's thoughts on Benoit and RVD. The reason I ask is because it's not that I didn't enjoy it.
Should have been better on paper.
But it just felt like there was something missing. It was almost like it was too slow at times. It's like there was a sort of, if you use the old TNT analogy, the blasting cap wasn't there.
Would you say that was a Styles Clash?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think you've always got that risk, I suppose, with someone like Van Damme and the way he's more spot-orientated style of wrestling. But I just wonder what everyone else's take on that was. Am I sort of an island unto myself in that regard?
It was a very good match. I think I think it's a fair point to make, and I think you can also make the same point, to be quite honest, for Edge and Eddie Guerrero. Because it was a good match, but they had better, and I think there was that feeling of... Because again, when you look at this card on paper beforehand, Jesus Christ, this could be well, we're talking about it, the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time. Yeah. But those two matches weren't the all-time greats that they may have been in some people's eyes beforehand. But even then, because of the strength of Shawn and Triple H and the strength of... And again, I'll actually say, I think the Brock and Rock's a very underrated match.
Yeah, very much. I mean, the great thing about that show is that, as you said, we've gone over what the double main event was whilst, okay, you know, Eddie and Edge had better matches and Benoit and RVD was a good match, but as Carl alluded to... probably seemed better on paper than actually ended up being in the match. But then I guess from when they're planning the pay-per-view, they weren't planning on those being like the focal points. You know, obviously it was going to be the two main events at the focal point. From an undercard point of view, they served their purpose absolutely fantastically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say as depth of the card. They were supplementary to those three matches that are the highlights, obviously.
Yeah. There's plenty. I mean, even those undercard matches that we stayed, like Benoit RVD, were still very good. Just outshone by the three main ones. But the interesting thing, because I absolutely agree with you, with SummerSlam 2002, it's probably my second favourite pay-per-view of all time. But I think we're going to have this recurring theme of everything that we hear tonight, is that even these pay-per-views, like SummerSlam 2002, aren't perfect. There's always some sort of dregs in there, as you briefly mentioned, Liam, the Undertaker test.
I was just going to say, mentioning Undertaker and test...
It's not like these matches were bad,
but it's nice. I remember thinking that could have been a lot worse than it was. Yeah. I mean, that was all right. You know, it was no better than you'd expect, but it wasn't terrible to watch either.
When comparison to everything else, it kind of stood out a little bit.
Well, yeah, but when you're talking about the peaks that you had on that car, it's only likely that that's going to happen.
I think the reason that we went with this one first of our picks around the table is because, again, if we're debating the best, to me, SummerSlam 2002. Is a pretty great benchmark to compare every other pay-per-view that we're going to talk about to. Obviously, Kieran's not the only person to think this. The People's H2O from Wrestling Forum said SummerSlam 2002, and it might be the best pay-per-view ever, period. Creative Name from Wrestling Forum voted for this one as well, and said that the reason being that he was there. The double main event was awesome. The opening with Ray and Kurt was the perfect way to open a pay-per-view, and Jericho versus Flair was the second match on the card, and one of the last Flair matches where he was actually good. Hank Hill, 85, from Wrestling Forum. Gonna throw my vote to SummerSlam 2002 on the pile as well. It's really hard to argue against that pay-per-view. Every match on the card meant something, no filler, no buffer matches, and I think it was downright Mania caliber. That and all the right winners as well. It was perfectly booked.
And it drew as well as a pay-per-view, which I think has got to be a criteria.
Yeah.
It's great storytelling, direction coming out of the show, and it drew money as well. So for me, it ticks all the
value
boxes.
Actually, one of the few years in which SummerSlam actually outshone WrestleMania. I mean, I know we had Rock Hogan that year, but...
WrestleMania 18 was a terrible show.
It's not a good show.
But in terms of overall pay-per-view, that was definitely one of the years where SummerSlam shone the most.
We'll agree here. We're going to go to the feedback. So that's the benchmark. That's what we're comparing it to. Power Butch Eye from the UK Fan Forum. Why doesn't anyone ever mention the Great American Bash 1989 in these things? The greatest pay-per-view ever for me. The best comedy match in Cornette versus Heyman. The crowd going apeshit for the skyscrapers. The blow-off to the Varsity Club versus Rick Steiner feud. And the pow, 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 pow quadruple hit of four fucking amazingly super-duper matches in Sting versus Muta, Luger versus Steamboat, War Games, and Flair versus Funk. He mentioned that why doesn't anyone ever mention it? Well, PT from Pro Wrestling Only also did. So did Bad News Gertner from TPWW, and K-Hawk20 from Pro Wrestling Only also mentioned Great American Bash. The Flair Funk match. That the two famous ones, obviously. I kind of do lean towards the Bash one a little bit more than the I Quit myself, even though it's not as climactic. But
I
love the energy of that match.
Yeah, I saw the Bash match first of the two, and. The general consensus that I've been told while I'd read and things of that nature was that the I Quit match was better. And I was just thinking through, and maybe a little bit jaded perhaps, a bit cynical, but I sat there and thought, this is really good, I'm enjoying it, but it's not quite up there with that Bash match.
I love the Bash match.
Yeah, I love both those matches.
The crowd is so hot in this pay-per-view,
so
by the way.
But the Flair Funk thing, the part that I want to go, and this is why I think that the Bash is better than the I Quit one, is actually the post-match
the brawl
where Muta gets involved as well, and they're doing the beat down on Flair. Sting comes to the rescue, and it's just, it goes on forever. And I was watching it recently, and I was just kind of like sat there watching it, and I was still laughing at it, like out of genuine joy, and just turning around to Liam and saying, like, it's still going on. It's been like almost like 12 minutes now, and this match is still going on, and I'm enjoying every fucking second of it.
Brilliant. It's just, what cause? It looks like it's over. It looks like that, you know,
over.
It looks like it's finished, and then Tony Funk throws a chair in the ring, and Ric Flair just loses his shit and just goes for him, climbs out the ring to kick his ass again. It just goes on and on, but it's so good.
It's the promo at the very end as well, when like they finally get rid of Muta and Funk. You know, Funk finally like just lets his ego go and just goes away. Decides, okay, the angle's done now. And like Flair just is fucking drenched in sweat and blood, and he grabs Sting and he goes, "No, come back here." And he goes, "Hey, look, I've never said this before in all my time, but thank you, buddy. Thank you, pal." And he just turns the camera and he addresses Funk and he just says, saying, "This is it now. I'm going to dog you for the rest of your life." And he goes, "I haven't even broken a sweat yet." And he's just like covered in blood. His hair just like,
he's got blood. He's got blood and mist on his face.
Blood and mist.
The other thing there as well is the, it was, it had a great build to it as well, because you've got it coming off the great series of
the
Steamboat and Flair
angle
matches, Funk attacking Flair, then the press conference with the neck brace and all that stuff. It was all fantastic stuff. And I'll say now, as much as I criticise Luger, that match with Steamboat match. It was a good match.
Very good.
And it was a novel ending, getting Steamboat to ultimate babyface Ricky Steamboat lose his composure and chase Luke with the chair.
And that's the run at like 2 miles an hour so he doesn't catch Lex, which is brilliant.
Well, someone should have told Luger that Brody was after him. He might have gone a bit quicker.
I think the one thing that I will say that may hold this show back a little, there really wasn't any kind of culmination, with the exception of the War Games match, and even then they had a post-match angle where, you know, this obviously the Funk Flair match led to the I Quit match. Sting and Muta was a controversial finish with a double pin. Again, you mentioned before Luger and Steamboat with the DQ finish. Climactic. It was wildly entertaining show, again helped by the hot crowd, but comparing it to SummerSlam 2002, which did have a feeling of culmination with Brock Lesnar winning the championship and the end to this great build, in terms of comparing those two, I think I am going to lean towards SummerSlam 2002 a tad. If with modern eyes, this show would probably not, you know, people now, you know, people of our ilk now be like, "Oh well, they didn't deliver the finishes that, you know, we were hoping for." And in all the big matches, they advertised a no DQ match, and then Lex Luger does a promo saying, "No, there will be DQs," and then the finish is a DQ. Yeah. So it's like, you can understand why with modern eyes maybe it wouldn't hold. And again, the big thing for this too, before you go there, we didn't watch this pay-per-view as it happened, which think honestly does hold it back a bit for us in terms of grading it against the current one.
From my perspective, or retrospective, watching it back is like, I didn't mind the non-finishes so much just because the action in the matches was so good.
And I think that's
like,
why
the ending didn't take away from it. I mean, as I said, I didn't care that there was like the ending wasn't great between Funk and Flair, because the post-match angle even fucking better. And it was just, it was just fantastic. It really was. That's a good choice.
We got another one here, and this is a little bit more of a choice I wasn't expecting. Arrogantly grateful from Wrestling Forum. I'm torn with a few choices here, but I'd have to say SummerSlam 91. Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect was, for me, one of the greatest matches of all time, and Bret winning the IC title on this pay-per-view was a big deal back then. I also really liked the opening match with the six-man tag. I know some people may see this as a throwaway, but I really loved it and thought it flowed well. I also really liked the Virgil versus Ted DiBiase match, with Piper being in Virgil's corner. Of course, anything with Ted DiBiase was pretty spot-on, but this was also a good match. And who can forget the Big Boss Man versus the Mountie? This was a great match with great entertainment throughout, and we can't deny it's become very memorable. The main event was pretty touch and go, with Warrior and Hogan against Slaughter, Mustafa and Adnan, and there were squash matches such as IRS versus Greg Valentine and the Natural Disasters versus the Bushwhackers. Legion of Doom also defeated the Nasty Boys for the tag titles on this show, which is pretty good, so I'll have to go with SummerSlam 91 overall.
I think you'll find that the actual main event was a wedding of 91.
It's both. Well, it went on last, I guess.
Yeah, that was a mistake, to be honest. I know I made a joke earlier on at the start of the show, but yeah, that was a bad mistake. But I obviously nostalgia and people's personal opinions obviously be a huge thing in what people like. For SummerSlam, like probably a lot of pay-per-views that are around at that time, particularly in 91, I think the first half of the show was considerably better than the second half.
Well, to be honest, though,
you know, because Bret Perfect was second, wasn't it? And then I agree, Virgil, Ted DiBiase, that angle was so well executed. Besides, like the lack of talent Virgil had, was very well done.
Pat Patterson
disagrees. Yeah, you were going to do it. I knew you were going
to
do it.
I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. And to be honest, I love Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, as much as Next Man, but like, just as a kid, just remembering the jailhouse match and just Bossman, because when I was a kid I was a Bossman fan.
Everyone loves the big bean can.
Yeah, a big Bossman fan. But in retrospect, when watching it, how good is the mountain that he's so cheesy when he's like beforehand he's doing the promo and he's like belittling all the local police, saying like, oh, you better do it the right way. And
The final scene where he's confronted in the jail by the rapist.
Alleged.
Yeah. Good old-fashioned family-friendly fun on the WWE.
Liam, there was no shower there. You can't prove anything.
I guess. I'm a little bit more cynical of this one in terms of being the best of all time, because I really think beyond that one match, there was nothing on that show that I would really want to go back and watch. And not that it's bad. I has Greg Valentine. Ugh. I don't think we need to really make a comment about the disasters and the bushwhackers. And that main event was long since Slaughter and Crew had any heat at all. Yeah. So I'm not as big a fan. And the wedding was fucking...
Wrong time. Did Greg Valentine even get his customary 15 minutes to warm up?
Well, the fans sure didn't, because they were cold as ice. I personally wouldn't put this one in here, Kieran.
No, it's fun in spots. The jailhouse match just broke through my memory and cracked me up. I was so like, is Mountie, how do you feel about it? At the time, I just thought it was the actual drizzling shits.
When you go back and you watch him bump, he's really awkward, and he's not like that. He's not, but at the same time, he's got a great comedic charm.
He's got a wacky funness to him.
Animated. It's frank.
Yeah, just to sort of echo on a few other points, I think we love the comedic timing of Jacques Rougeau as he's going to the prison, but the match is nothing to write home about. Virgil DiBiase, I think, benefits from a really hot crowd. And it helps having Piper there.
Yeah.
But the match itself isn't good, and I don't put any of the blame for that on DiBiase. Brett Perfect is, I could run out of superlatives to describe how great that match is. There's just, it's Bret Hart and Kurt Hennig, for fuck's sake.
Pick one.
No, there's too many. there's just too many, Kieran, for God's sake.
Green Lawler from Wrestling Forum suggested Wrestle War 89, mainly because I was there and thought the main event was the best match I ever saw live. Maybe I'm remembering things too fondly, but that main event was epic. Flair versus Steamboat in one of their best matches, and the Terry Funk angle begins at the end. Also has the Varsity Club versus the Road Warriors, and the Great Muta debuts on pay-per-view.
Is that the pile driver on the table? Yeah, that's great.
The classic angle, I think this might be one of those ones where personal nostalgia and the fact that he was there, that is a great match and a great angle, and the match was a long match, 30 minutes plus, the angle went a long time afterwards. But in terms of an overall pay-per-view, I'm again not going to compare this one to SummerSlam 2002. It's the story of a one match show and one great angle and a few little bits and pieces compared to a great overall presentation.
I think this is kind of a theme that will probably come up during this discussion anyway, but individual moments are real highlights in people's pro wrestling experience growing up or whatever. It's like WrestleMania 10, the ladder match for me. Exactly the same thing. Certain things will stick in people's memory and nostalgia. That's more what a great show that was, and maybe based on main and the angle, but overall probably not.
Yeah, nostalgia and their own personal opinions of when they're watching at the time is going to take into serious account.
As well, that the SummerSlam 91 probably a bit of that as well, with Bret and Perfect. I mean, because that has become such a iconic memory.
Yeah.
I'm sure that kind of factors into that as well. So,
I'd agree. Moving along here, Civi from the UK Fan Forum. I still love the Royal Rumble 1992. Just so many things to love. A great opener, the great feel-good moment of Piper winning the IC title. The Rumble itself is the most genius put-together match I've ever seen. CS from Pro Wrestling Only says the same thing. Royal Rumble 92, still the greatest Rumble ever. And another very good undercard match between the New Foundation and the Orient Express. Thoughts on Rumble 92?
Best Rumble of all time in terms of the actual Rumble itself.
Ric Flair carrying 29 other guys.
But wasn't Hogan such a dick grabbing Sid?
What a cunt.
Why?
Oh my God. Yeah, Hogan's such a freaking heel.
What a loser.
he lost. He should have gone to the back.
Yeah.
He did that. He pulled that exact same trick with his own friends in the previous Royal Rumbles. It's cock.
The thing is, however great Flair was in 92, and in that Rumble specifically, it was Heenan that was the star of that pay-per-view.
Awesome.
Heenan was fucking amazing. Yeah. I mean, he really was. Just like when he's crying and he's like, he's just begging God. He says, look, I won't do anything bad again, I swear. Just let Flair win.
You've even got Monsoon chipping in as well, There goes your meal ticket brain. Don't jump, it's a long way down.
Okay.
The thing about the 92 Rumble is also, you've got the significance of, it's the first Rumble where there's actually something tangible at stake. I think, you know,
'89 and '90,
you know, there was nothing for the winner other than, you know, the prestige of winning the Rumble.
The Rumble itself.
91
wasn't over. It was the
vehicle for Hogan to get the title shot at Slaughter, but it was never made
that
over.
Stipulation.
It wasn't clear, and this was the first time they did it. And obviously, subsequently from 92 onwards, that's where it's been. The winner gets the main event at WrestleMania, or gets the championship match, as it's been come to know in recent years.
Become now,
but I think it is still even today the greatest single Rumble match. Piper winning is a really nice feel good moment. I'm not so sure about the love for the Orient Express and the new foundation. Really,
I don't think it's as good as the Rockers match the year before.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know. LOD and the Natural Disasters.
No, that's terrible.
That's the shit.
There's another stinker on that show. What is it? Beverly's Bushwhackers.
Beverly's and Bushwhackers. Oh. It's ironic, isn't it? We mentioned the shits and the Bushwhackers.
Yeah. Jameson at ringside, and we're not talking Jenna. Oh. Fuck.
I want to just something that's popped in my head about the love the Rumble itself gets. It seems to be unanimously everyone's favourite Rumble. Yeah. Is there an element of it being Flair's, Flair coming over with the reputation, you know, the Iron Man, 60 Minute Man, that being really his only one of his few standouts, especially duration of match for Flair, is there an element of people looking for it to be better than it was, maybe? I loved it. I just wonder.
I see where you're going with that.
Because this was Flair's big WWF coming out. It fantasized for years what would happen if Flair went over, and then when he finally gets there, he's allowed to put on this performance and go over.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe it's a case in a lot of people's minds. I would have been too young at the time to sort of think this way, but I suppose everyone would go there with the notion of, oh, he's going to the land of the giants, Hogan's going to bury him, that sort of thing. And even as a kid, I was expecting Hogan to win the Rumble.
Yeah.
I was naive enough to think, you know, Ric Flair's not going to win. So the shock when Flair wins, I remember being absolutely livid at the time as a small child.
Yeah.
You know, even I had the roasting.
And you're cynical to this day.
I overlooked Hogan holding Sid's hand out of the ring. Yeah, I admit it, but I think maybe it's a lot of the old NWA crowd, if you like, thinking Flair's got no chance here. And for him to actually have that great moment in a run that I suppose was so empty, really. When you look back at Flair's initial run, he's really got the Rumble win, obviously the good match with Savage at
great
Mania.
Match.
Mm-hmm. Great match with Savage, and the match with Perfect. But I think that there's probably some truth to what Kieran says. With the way I was looking at it, even as a young child, perhaps. But I do still think, even with that in mind, I'd give it my sort of favourite Rumble tag.
Is this again another case of one great highlight? And yeah, if you go, but then again, there is the Piper victory over our good friend Jacques Rougeau. Yeah.
And you also got to remember in terms of we're looking at percentages, the Rumble was over an hour long, so it was a good percentage of the show. So with that and with Piper as well, a good percentage of the show was good.
Yeah, I'm a decent contender, I think. Very decent contender. Yeah. Again, one of my favourite usernames, Colin Bollocks from UK Fan Forum. Top to bottom, Backlash 2000 for me. The WWF was at their hottest, and the Triple H vs. Rock feud was as big a feud as they'll ever have. Love the tag team opener and the light heavyweight title match, maybe Malenko's finest WWF match.
Well, if I can just say quickly on the light heavyweight title match, it's the probably the this is and this is credit to Dean Malenko, who I think is fantastic, just for the record. Yeah. It's probably the only time that anyone has given a shiny shite about Scott Taylor, and that includes his immediate family.
Let's not also forget the instant classic of Eddie Guerrero and S.A. Rios. Yeah, no,
we're missing Benoit Jericho from here as well, which is another very good match from this show.
Well, I mean, for anyone who's probably new to the podcast, I recommend you listen to our Good and the Bad and the Ugly of the Year 2000, in which we do cover a great many 2000 pay-per-views, Backlash being one of them, Rumble, Backlash, Fully Loaded, and SummerSlam, all from 2000 being great pay-per-views.
This is the one where after they had Triple H, you know, win at WrestleMania, Rock finally wins the belt at Backlash with Steve Austin's help.
Yeah.
Very good show. And the crowd's so fucking molten hot for The Rock and Triple H.
And also, we cannot forget Kurt Angle versus Big Show as well.
The showster. I wasn't a fan of Kurt Angle. Wait, do it to somebody less valuable than Kurt Angle, please.
Yeah. Well, he was Kurt Angle, wasn't it?
All right, we're going to move on to our second of our choices around the table. We're heading towards G. John Chase now, who's going to suggest his pick for the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time. G, what are you giving us?
ECW One Night Stand, the first one, 2005, is my favourite pay-per-view of all time, even if we included WrestleManias. And yeah, the reason for this is we're going into that whole nostalgia thing. It's what how where you were at the time when you were watching it, and to very quickly go through a brief backdrop. As I said, like on the last podcast of ECW, I didn't unfortunately start watching ECW until a month after it closed. So everything, in my opinion, is retrospective, I'm afraid. But yeah, I mean, I just remember I bought that pay per view. I was around a friend's house. I didn't actually know what was on the card. That's how psyched I was.
That's like a lot of ECW pay-per-views from back in the day. Yeah.
I didn't know what was on the card. I didn't read anything about it. All I heard was WWE is doing an ECW pay-per-view, and I was like, I'm sold. All right, anything to do with ECW, I'm going to watch. And I remember just like moments before it was going to start, a sudden dread going over my body, just going like, oh fuck, this is going to be shit, isn't it? It's going to be dope. It's Vince McMahon. It's fucking Vince McMahon. His balls are going to be all over this. And it's like, this is going to be horrid. And I just remember, because I was watching it with my friends, Dean, Joe and Matt, and just that first shot, and Joey Styles come out, and I just had a huge smile on my face. Dun, dun, dun. And I was, yeah, dun, dun. And the music, and yeah, they played the original intro that they used to have on all the tapes, you know, showing like all the montages, and the smile's getting bigger and bigger on my face, and I was thinking, oh shit. Be honest with you, there was a bit of moisture coming around the old eyes there. I was like, holy shit, nothing else, guys.
I'm really glad he went with eyes.
Yeah, it's definitely that eye. They're actually doing it. And just from then on, I just sat back and I just relaxed instantly, and I was just like, this is going to be fantastic. This is no way going to be shit. And I was absolutely right. It wasn't shit. It was a fantastic show.
I think a lot of people had those reservations about the idea of a WWF.
They'd be right to.
Produced. And rightfully so, yeah. Because I think a lot of the charm of this show, and this is one of the ones that was floating around my head as well, is the fact that it is so different and it is so unlike anything they've ever done before or since. And it was just a complete... It was the farewell that ECW fans wanted to have and never got to have. It was just a very it was such a surreal show. I mean, we were watching it and we were just looking at all these things, just like, you know, the Sandman's entrance, and it was just you know, Heyman's promo to Naka and awesome. There were so many things about it. Let's be honest, in terms of in-ring action, it's not the best pay-per-view of all time.
I'll like to do what Kieran did, where we kind of went through the matches quite quickly. I mean, but then like with ECW, not every pay per view ECW did was great and had always the best action. But again, it's like with the chap who said SummerSlam 91. It's, you know, watching the Jericho Lance Storm, which was a very good match, really good opener. You had obviously Rhino versus Sabu, which was really good. Rey Mysterio Psicosis, which could have been better.
He had his baggy pants on there.
Yeah, he had his baggy pants on. Didn't like the fact he took the mask off either.
Psicosis?
Psicosis. Didn't like that.
Did a WWE match, which didn't go over well with that crowd at all.
Yeah, it didn't go over, though the leg drop was fucking insane. That guillotine leg drop to the outside. Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, which was slightly disappointing by only their own standards. The match was good, but you were expecting more from those two.
They didn't click at all. There's a big story about Eddie Guerrero on that show where he was not happy to be there.
I thought there's one or both of them didn't want to be there.
No, it was Eddie.
You had super crazy Tajiri Little Greedo, where if anyone who knows ECW well, I think it's actually physically impossible for those three to have a bad match when they're in the ring together, because they just had so many of them and they just know each other so well. It was just fantastic. Tommy Dreamer and Sandman versus the Dudley Boys in the main event was what it was. You know, it's just doing that whole
car crash, but it was entertaining for what it was.
But I just remember, like, okay, they may not have been the best matches of all time, but I sat there with such joy watching it, which accumulated in so many ways, in the angles which I'm going to describe to you now. The first one being Mike Awesome versus Tanaka. Which was just like, if you've seen any of the classic Tanaka Mike Awesome matches, that was exactly the same. You could compare them, the same moves, almost in the same order. It was just like as if they literally ripped them out, like with a time machine, ripped them out of the late '90s and put them there. The two great promos that you had, you know, you had like Rob Van Dam come out which is one of the actual negatives I will give that show, of just the unfortunate, which no one's to blame for, is that Rob Van Dam didn't wrestle on the show because he was injured. If Rob Van Dam was on the show, and you'd assume he'd have been in the main event, that would have just like knocked it out of the park even more for me. But you know, he does really solid promo, only topped by the man himself, who you can always rely upon to steal the show, Paul Heyman, and his great fucking shoot promo.
It was nice for the, as much as I've ragged on the fans, it was nice for them because they did deserve it for the loyalty that they've shown to the company over the years, and the wrestlers as well. You know, they all deserve to have that moment rather than, you know, somewhere out in, you know, no disrespect, I think it was Arkansas, but
yeah, Pine Bluff.
Yeah, it's not an ECW hotbed. It's not where things should have ended for them. So it was nice that they had that moment, and like you. I can tell from the way you describe it, there's a lot of emotion there. Much like yourself, I was concerned when it was first announced. I thought, you mentioned Vince would have his balls all over it, and yeah. You know, thankfully this wasn't a woman in Florida in a tanning booth. And as it transpired, Vince didn't really have his fingerprints all over it. But I do think in the end, all the positives are built more on emotion than in terms of the match quality. And that's not to say it didn't deliver part of what you wanted, you know. Like you say, Awesome Tanaka was as crazy as you'd expect. Yeah. Jericho Lance was a bit of a disappointment for me, but that I think that was purely because of time constraints. Yeah. Eddie and Benoit was really disappointed. I don't think it was even a good match if you were to say their standards are so high it couldn't possibly live up to it. I just don't think it was a good match. Yeah. And Liam alluded to issues with Eddie, shall we say. Yeah. But there was plenty of emotion. It's certainly one that I look back on fondly, but it doesn't make the best one for me. I'd probably put it a notch below SummerSlam 02. I'd probably put it a notch below the Bash.
Okay.
In terms of what we've heard so far.
Kieran, what are your thoughts on One Night Stand?
Yeah, no,
ranking it over.
It's a tough one. I absolutely loved it. I think when I talked about the Flair thing, the kind of that. Maybe the tribal mentality of wanting to see your guy or the guy you supported for a long time do well on the big stage, which is, whether I love it or hate it, that's what the WWF is and was. I think for me personally, that was a big part. I think listening to yourself, it seems to be probably a general consensus. I think it was what made it so great was we were hoping they would show the world what ECW was, and I think when it's delivered and it felt authentic to a degree, to a large degree. I think that's why it's looked back so fondly, because it was. It was the right goodbye. Really, it did it justice, and I think that's why it was more of a proud thing. I think for people who just wanted to see that those, you know, people like Van Damme and all those guys. I know that's later, but wanted to see these guys get kind of the respect and due that we'd all kind of accumulated over watching ECW over the years. So I think that's not a knock on it, but that's why I think. Yeah. That's why for me it wouldn't be up
it
there.
It puts somewhat of a ceiling on it because of the nature of the
paper. It was what it was. It was fantastic. I loved it. Nothing wrong with it, but notch below, definitely.
I love that product so much because I loved what Paul Heyman did and what he brought out in me. And it was actually the last time from start of the show to the end of the show that I actually just had joy watching a show. Just absolutely sit back like a kid, just joy, thinking this is the fucking greatest show I'm watching right now, and I just can't believe it.
Alrighty, well, obviously you're not the only person who thought that One Night Stand was the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time. Droford from TPW Forums and Coffee from Pro Wrestling Only also voted for it. Todd from Is That Your Kid podcast says, growing up, I watched all three mainstream companies, but I was never allowed to order pay-per-views, but I knew a guy that used to tape them and give me the VHSs the next day. We've all been there. I used to have tapes and tapes of all pay-per-views, and the one that came to mind when this question was raised that I watched so many times that I wore the tape out was In Your House Bad Blood from 1997. Sure, it may not have been the best as the undercard wasn't great, but we saw the Austin Owen feud restart, and most importantly, the Hell in a Cell match between Michaels and Taker with the debut of Kane. I'll never forget how bloody Michaels was, and Kane ripping off the door of the cell. Kane was such a badass then. Great match, great debut, but the shadow of Pillman dying was looming massively over this whole card.
I was going to say, it's an infamous pay-per-view for a lot of reasons, both sort of kayfabe and not kayfabe. With the death of Pillman hangs over the card. It directly impacts the card as well. Not to try and trivialise.
He's supposed to wrestle twice.
Not to try and trivialise the Pillman death, but it impacts on the card because he obviously doesn't wrestle because he's dead. The Hell in a Cell match was great. As a pure match, it's better than Taker Foley.
Easily. It's fantastic. I love the Hell in a Cell match.
It's one of my favourite matches of all time.
I think it's I think it's brilliant.
That Shawn Michaels is pretty good,
it's,
folks.
It's a great performance. It's a great performance by Michaels. And not to disrespect Taker, he's great in the match as well. It's one of the few times that Kane is interesting. But outside of those sort of two events, if you like, it's not a great card after that.
It's a one match show.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who's really caring about the Patriot and Vader against Brett and Davey Boy in the flag match? No one's caring about that. No one's caring about the Nation of Domination against LOD in a handicap match. It's just
DOA Barriquas, anyone?
And on that note, moving on.
Was that tag match like Davey versus Del Wilkes, Somers on a pole or something?
Should have been. One of those pay-per-views that you grade, and maybe there's some personal nostalgia for him, but again, it's more about the match than the pay-per-view overall, I think, on that nomination. Fanny Pack from the UK Fan Forum. Another great name. I love Fully Loaded 1999. The main event first blood match between Austin and Taker is action-packed with big stakes on the line. Triple H vs. Rock on pay-per-view delivered as usual. DX vs. DX. Brutal matches including Snow Boss Man, Kane Show. Well, you sound brutal.
And, I was going to say, in what context does he want to use the word brutal when it refers to Kane and the Big Show?
And Blackman Shamrock. Fantastic.
No.
I'm not sensing a lot of support around the room.
I respect that you know, nostalgia. He fully believes that that's his favorite pay per view. So fair play to him.
It's an important show in the sense of it's the genuine end to the Austin McMahon storyline. In truth, isn't it? But I don't think it's a great wrestling card. You know, we got the Acolytes against the Hardys, which isn't, you know, it is what it is. Hardcore title matches again, yeah, be dime a dozen. You know, you can see the exact same match on Raw during that period. Taker and Austin, it's an interesting one because I always looked at it. It was always a match I looked forward to, but to me, it was never a match that delivered.
Yeah, absolutely.
They never meshed. No. SummerSlam '98, I put to one side because of Austin's concussion, and obviously the impact that would have on that match. But by and large, I don't think they ever clicked in the ring, really.
I don't think they ever had that one true great match, and I think that's the case here as well. Shane O'Mac version 2 from UK Fan Forum has a couple of suggestions here that may be actually dark horses. Vengeance 2005. After the massive success of ECW's One Night Stand and the fact that it eclipsed most of what WWE had been offering, WWE responded a couple weeks later with a stacked pay-per-view that rivaled the year's WrestleMania for quality and booking. It featured the WrestleMania 21 rematch of Angle and Michaels, the Hell in a Cell finale of Batista and Triple H. Also, John Cena defended the WWE title in a triple threat match against Chris Jericho and Christian at a time when Christian was getting red hot as a single star. The fact that WWE were in the midst of a draft meant that Raw had both world titles at the time, which meant it was as loaded as a single brand pay-per-view could possibly be. The undercard was solid, though not incredible, but when you had the triple main event listed above, it really didn't matter.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, beyond those three matches, I can't remember much else about the show, but I do remember my general consensus at the time was that it was a great show. I mean, Michaels-Kurt Angle was a really good match, questionable whether it was better than the WrestleMania one. And he was absolutely spot on there. The Cena, Jericho, Christian, whilst probably on paper doesn't sound particularly special, at the time Christian was getting a push, and so it felt like something new and exciting to watch. For me, it was the Hell in a Cell that stood out for me on that show, because I didn't expect that match to be good due to the limitations of Batista and Triple H as well, to an extent. For me, the lasting memory is always that bit at the very end, the closing to the match, where Batista's got him in a Batista bomb. Triple H has grabbed Sledgehammer and he picks him up and he's got him elevated to hit the bomb, and Triple H is just lifting up the Sledgehammer ready to hit him, like he did on Raw the previous night where it knocked Batista out, and just he's about to hit him, Batista smacks the Batista bomb down. And I just thought,
great,
wow,
finish.
That is a fucking great finish.
Great finish.
Fair play
to
both of them. Yeah, great way to finish the feud. Absolutely.
And he kicked out of the pedigree too.
Yeah, kicked out of the pedigree. Yeah, Triple H actually helping putting someone over.
He made a guy.
Three times in a row.
He made a guy. Thoughts from the other side of the table here about this particular pay-per-view? Any kind of standout memories?
This, for me, it fits into a category of a lot of really good shows, and that there's a lot of really good shows.
There are a lot of very good pay-per-views, but we're talking about the all-time
best.
Yeah,
I mean, I think for me, a really good show, but for me to be, it doesn't stand out up there with the Elite kind of pay-per-views for my liking. But great show though, but not with the Elite shows.
There's another one here that might actually fit into that category that he suggested. Unforgiven 2006, another single branded Raw pay-per-view that was packed to the gills. This is obviously referencing the Triple H and Shawn Michaels Hell in a Cell match with Vince, Shane and The Big Show. He mentions obviously it's Trish Stratus out of retirement match against Lita in her hometown. Randy Orton and Carlito follow that, and while both men could be accused of going through the motions at times, they were motivated as hell here, and the end result was one of my favourite finishes to an Orton match ever, which is the double springboard into the RKO. Edge and John Cena follow that with a TLC match, obviously Edge's speciality in Edge's hometown, one of the biggest gimmick matches in the post-Attitude era, with these two stars having to follow DX, a Hell in a Cell match, a retirement match, and a motivated Randy Orton, and damn it, they delivered. One of my favourite gimmick matches.
I think sort of echoing Kieran's point with the previous pay-per-view, it's a good show. The Cena Edge feud was a really enjoyable feud, and it was a nice contrast to having had SummerSlam the month before in Boston to then go to Edge's hometown. It's nice the way that the calendar worked out in that regard. But I can't claim to be the biggest fan of the DX McMahon's no. Big Show Hell in a Cell, especially with the Big Show's ass, and it's all hilarious and it's funny and it's, but it's not really, is it? Let's not kid ourselves. Michael Cole, it's one of those where Michael Cole could be on commentary laughing, but no one else in the world really is. The women's match has that nice bit of emotion for Trish. I'm not going to go overboard in panning a women's match as people come to expect from me, but you know, just to telegraph it there, it's nice that Trish had that send off in a company which isn't always known for giving people nice send offs for their service over the years. But I don't think it's a particularly good match. I think I've probably seen. I think the one that Lita and Trish had on Raw was probably better than this. And Carlito Orton, you know, wasn't bad or anything, but it's a nice finish. But nothing, you know, you don't remember that 2 or 3 months down the line, really, I don't think, in most cases.
No, I'd agree. Moving along then, Gary Thompson, WCW Bash at the Beach 1996. Fantastic wrestling undercard, like all WCW pay-per-views back then, and the Hulk Hogan heel turn. Don't like Hogan, but that was huge in wrestling and started something enormous in the NWO. It's Rey and Psychosis in a fantastic opener, a really good opener they put on Mysterio's DVD. I remember there was a John Tenta, Big Bubba Rogers Silver Dollar match, where they send Jimmy Hart to climb up the pole to get the sock filled with silver dollars, because the other two guys are too fat. I don't think that this is as good as some of the later cards would be in terms of top to bottom action.
Well, yeah, considering the card that was before it, the show that's before
the Great American Bash 96, which is a good candidate, although maybe more for angles than matches, but a great show nonetheless.
There's some great angles on it, but like the matches were good as well. I mean, we debated this before, you know, as you said, Benoit, Sullivan, Sting, Regal, which is good.
Malenko, Rey Mysterio
being really good. But yeah, the tag match in particular with the Four Horsemen, I love.
And Kevin Nash, powerbomb Eric Bischoff, and
yeah,
glorious.
There was a lot of good stuff on that show, not just angles.
But Bash at the Beach 1996, to Gary's point, I don't know if I'd call it the best. Although, again, a very great match in Mysterio and Psychosis, and an all-time legendary angle. Does that carry it enough to be in the best pay-per-view ever in your eyes?
What it's got over the ECW, with all due respect, G, is relevance. So massive markup for that. But I think there's overall probably not the greatest of pay-per-views, but again, understandable why it's been selected. Absolutely,
it's one of those where it's got nice sort of bookends, if you like, to the card with the opener and the angle at the end, which no one in the world saw coming. But I don't think there's enough in between those two to categorise it as a really great show. I think WCW did better during that time period, as we've alluded to there.
Stevie G, 1980 from the UK Fan Forum. Agree with SummerSlam 2002, but WCW Spring Stampede 99 holds a special place with Hoovy and Blitzkrieg, Hack versus Bam Bam, Malenko and Benoit versus Raven and Saturn, and Ray Jr. and Kidman being standout matches. This was the last great WCW pay-per-view. Yeah.
Thank you very much for stealing my line there. Thanks a lot. In the sort of the think of a boxer on the ropes. It's the last great swing from the company. You've got. I didn't think I'd get the laugh in it.
I love your analogies.
But But it's got some great match on that card.
Homer Simpson and Dragon the
opponent. And that kind of, you know, an episode of The Simpsons and comedy kind of sums up WCW towards the end, doesn't it? He mentioned the tag match there. I absolutely love that
great
tag. I love that tag match. And even the sort of the Benoit hard way at the end when he bleeds, and they don't even celebrate. They just have to carry him out because he's pissing of blood.
As soon as the diamond head on a steel chair, which doesn't look too good in hindsight.
But Bam Bam and
Hack. It's a complete train wreck of a match, but it's very fun to watch. Hoovy Blitzkrieg's a great opener.
Hoovy Blitzkrieg's fantastic.
Hoovy drive off the second rope finish.
The only real disappointment from that show, because I mean Conan and Disco wasn't great, wasn't expecting it to be.
It wasn't bad.
And was it Riggs and Mikey Whipwreck was absolutely nothing to write home about. I think the only real disappointment I had on that card was Ray and Kidman.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of that might be down to the nasty spill that Ray takes early on off the steps of it. For anyone who's seen it, he I think it's just a
he's going for a head scissors.
It's just a spinning head scissors.
Yeah, Kidman gets the backdrop and he holds onto the barricade. He wraps his leg around Kidman's head and he swings around to do the head scissors and he smashes his face into the stairs.
Right off the corner, so just above the eye. And you can see how he sort of loses his composure as you would and kicks the stairs away. And I think that probably impacts on that match. Steiner Booker T is a fun match as well for me.
Yeah.
And obviously, then you got the rematch of Goldberg and Nash.
Which isn't bad.
Which is a real fun match considering, you know, it's got the potential, you know. What sort of mood is Nash going to be in? Is he going to be motivated? How much is he going to care?
I'm surprised his heart held up before this show.
You always wonder with Nash yourself before pay-per-views, but, you know, thank our lucky stars it did. And that was a really fun match. I think it was the last good pay-per-view from that company.
Although we've talked about the whole card, and in true WCW fashion, we completely ignored the rather ostensible main event of Diamond Dallas Page and winning the WCW title against Hogan, Sting and Flair with Randy Savage as guest referee. Yeah, looking really rough. Not a good match. Not a good main event. Alrighty, we've got a round table. We've had a couple of nominations from us. We're going to get into the third one, which is actually going to be mine. The reason why I'm going to pick this one, I'm not really sure whether I'm actually going to make a case for it being the best, but I was really, really surprised just because nobody mentioned it in the feedback. No one's going to mention it around the table. And that's AAA's When Worlds Collide pay-per-view from November 1994, which for years was the benchmark pay-per-view that a lot of, you know, WWF pay-per-views, WCW pay-per-views would be compared to, in the sense that there isn't a bad match on the card. Nothing even is remotely close to a bad match on this card. It's only 2 hours long. There's five matches. Very well known, most famously, for the Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr 2 out of 3 falls match with Octagon El Hijo del Santo. But the card up and down is nothing but really good matches. The crowd heats through the roof. This was WCW, a WCW-produced pay-per-view that was supposed to go 3 hours, went two, due to some classic WCW timing issues. There's a great bloodbath in the main event with Conan and Perro Aguayo. Rey Mysterio, Heavy Metal, and Latin Lover in a six-man tag against Madonna's boyfriend. Puesa Guerrero and Psychosis in another really, really good match. The opening minis match is really good as well. There's just so much quality in this card, and it's just an interesting thing to me that no one really mentioned it, because for years, internet fans of our ilk, really lauded When Worlds Collide, and it only did 40,000 buys on pay-per-view, so there's not a lot of people that would have watched it live, but in terms of people who watched it retrospectively because of the legend, and especially because it opened, it was really the first exposure to a lot of guys like Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr and Psychosis that people maybe had heard about elsewhere.
Yeah, as this in terms of match quality, absolutely. I mean,
Art Barr's fucking great.
Art Barr's, yeah. I was just making an exposure joke about Art Barr, but so does it? How would you say it holds retrospectively? And is it something that, because of the period in time when it was produced, how it was so different to what the mass audience that we would have been subject to? You know, I say it was the gateway, but it was the gateway, so there's nothing before it. Is that kind of, does that affect maybe the perception at the time? How do you say it holds up compared to...
Well, and this is one of those things, again, where, because I didn't see it at the time, this was watch years later, but I think it holds up pretty well. The matches are still really damn good, and again, crowd heat carries a lot of matches that are older when you're looking at them back, and the crowd heat's just through the roof. I don't necessarily think the Conan Perro Aguayo cage match, it's a bloodbath, it's a fantastic, gory, dramatic match, and it holds up based on the drama far more than the in-ring action, which is the biggest case of that on the entire show. I think the Los Gringos Locos match holds up really well. I think the Rey Mysterio match holds up really well. The minis match does. There's a six-man tag on there that doesn't hold up so well. I don't think it's the best pay-per-view of all time, but I can certainly understand why people for years thought it was, because watching it back, and there's no weak spots. And I think that's, especially when we get to some of these late ones that people suggested, that's something that's really going to come in big. And again, for Carl Jones' suggestion, and I think we'll segue to this now because it's such a natural segue, in terms of a show that really doesn't have any weak points at all, and it's all good. And this is one of the big things about SummerSlam 2002, is there really is no down period. There's no, you know, I don't mean this is a slight on women's wrestling, but there's no Divas match spot, if you will, in terms of at SummerSlam 2002, where there is no trying to bring the crowd down. It's all, let's just go and do a great show. When Worlds Collide has that same quality, and Carl Jones is now going to speak about his choice for the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time, which is very, very similar.
Yeah, so for my choice, folks, I'm going with King of the Ring 1995.
Get out of my house!
I was so tempted during your description there to jump in with a Donald Sterling an ethnic joke, but I won't. Given it's the LA Sports Coliseum, you know, it was begging to be hit, but I'll leave it alone for now. I've gone for another 2 hour pay per view, and I'll be perfectly honest. I was going back and forth when this topic was raised last week by Liam. I went through sort of back catalogues of pay-per-views. I've watched a couple recently just to try and as a refresher and think, is this as good as I remember it, or is it just am I inflating it somewhat through nostalgia? So I've had a complete cop out, and I've. As we're going for trying to pin the best pay-per-view, I've decided to go down the logic of what I think is the best B pay-per-view in WWE history. So that, for me, is Canadian Stampede. Now, it's only a two-hour show. It's only a four-match card. But I would argue, even in the match that I would consider the worst of the four, which is Vader-Taker, is still, you know, to me it's still passable.
Really,
I think
it's
a pretty good match. I don't know what the general consensus here is, but I think it's got a good opener with Mankind and Triple H, and it's the natural progression of their feud following on from the King of the Ring, and the way you've got them brawling throughout the show.
The
recurring theme throughout the show, so the way it leads into the steel cage match at SummerSlam 97 is always a touch that I've really liked. You've got a hot crowd in Canada. Some different wrestling when it comes to Taka and the Great Sasuke, where Taka basically stole the Great Sasuke's job. For anyone who doesn't know the story, the idea was to bring the Great Sasuke in and sign him to a contract, but Vince watched, and if you know what Vince is like, calling moves, it's fantastic just to hear Vince during this match thinking, what the hell is going on? But it's a great match. I think he must have liked Taka's facials, the way he sold. I'm not sure what it would have been in truth, but basically, Taka ended up getting the job, and the match was so good they did it the next night on Raw. And then you've got the main event. The five-man tag where you've got Austin and Team USA, you know. You think of the names, you don't really think Team USA, Gold Dust, Ken Shamrock, and
the
Legion of Doom. Well, okay. And then you've got the obviously Team Canada of Brett Owen, the Bulldog.
Of a guy from California, a guy from Britain, and a guy from Ohio.
But I think it's the nearest I can think of in terms of a crowd to what we would call the football or soccer for any American listeners, that sort of partisan crowd that you'd get. And I think that atmosphere really plays a part in that tag match. The way that they sort of, I really like the way it starts off fast with Austin and Brett. They bring it back down again, and then it's the big crescendo at the end. The way they get the Hart family involved, the way Stu's a trooper being involved. Bruce Hart tries to glom on the way Bruce
Hart does.
Of course
he does. That's all Bruce Hart does.
It wouldn't be a Hart family event if Bruce Hart didn't try and steal the line.
Try and give low blows to everybody.
But it was great the way the family was involved. Austin is an absolute star.
He's awesome.
It's the making of Steve Austin as a main event man. The way he's handcuffed, dragged out of the ring, giving the middle finger to the fans.
And to your point about the 10-man tag, about, you know, starting hot and cooling it down, the great thing about that match to me is that the audience doesn't see it that way. The audience is live all the way through, start to finish, and it really makes for such a great dynamic.
That's it to me. I mean, There are obviously longer pay-per-views. There are more historically significant pay-per-views. I'm not going to try and suggest there aren't. There's probably one or two emails perhaps that have even suggested better B pay-per-views. I'd be shocked if a Money in the Bank wasn't mentioned with Punk. I imagine that's probably going to come up
at
some stage. But for me, you've got four good matches. You know, there's nothing bad on the card. You've got a red hot crowd. And it was during that great period where the company's crisscrossing between America and Canada for all their live shows. To me, it's a fantastic period. And I think this is one of the examples of where Brett refers to what we thought we were putting on at the time was a lot better than what WCW was producing. By comparison, WCW was crap. And I wouldn't say I'd go that far, but to me, I think this is a good example of where WWF is putting on a better show, but that maybe isn't penetrating through with a wider audience.
Carl, you weren't the only person to mention this. A few people here. From Wrestling Forum, yeah, baby, and a big Sparky like this one. Craig Atkinson voted for this. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum. Ignoring the free-for-all match, which I believe was the Blackjacks and the Godwins.
I didn't mention that for a reason.
Yeah, hot opening between Mankind and Helms that continued their
feud. Damaging to my case.
Yeah, hot opening between Mankind and Helmsley that continued their feud from King of the Ring and beautifully set up the cage match, just like you said. Taka vs. Sasuke in one of the best light heavyweight matches that the WWF has ever managed. That was actually a big thing for me when watching this show, is actually after reading about Sasuke so much in the magazines, getting to see this guy, and actually being like, well, hell, this other guy's looking pretty goddamn good. Undertaker vs. Vader in a decent but not brilliant title match, and the incredible 10-man tag main event, red hot crowd, great match, excellent finish, and a post-match celebration like you've never seen in the company before or since. Brilliant, brilliant show. Last from Pro Wrestling Only, I've always been partial to Super Brawl 2. One Shogun from UK Fan Forum also said, Super Brawl 2 was a cracking pay-per-view from WCW, with a Pillman vs. Liger opener which was unlike anything I'd ever seen at the time. When people say the Dynamite Kid vs. Tiger Mask blew them away because it was something they'd never seen before, Pillman vs. Liger was like that for me as a 7 or 8 year old little shit, having only seen a handful of WWF and WCW videos. The rest of the show was fun too. I've seen people say that Sting vs. Luger was crap, and it might be. I haven't seen it in years, but at the time I was really into it. Rude vs. Steamboat was class. Windham and Rhodes versus Austin and Zabisco was great as well. And he also suggested, on the WWF side of things, I've got to throw some love for SummerSlam 1989. Maybe it's just me being nostalgic, but it's my first WWF tape, but I loved pretty much everything about it. Had a bit of everything. A big main event tag match with loads going on. Savage was all over the place. I thought Zeus was terrifying. Hogan was Hogan doing his thing. Even Beefcake was alright in that match. Then there was the Elizabeth and Sherry stuff. Warrior beating Rude in a great match. All the mental interviews from Warrior, Piper, Dusty, Savage, etc. The Hart Foundation versus the Brainbusters opener was fantastic. The six-man Santana, Rockers, versus Martel Rougeau's match was a lot of fun. Glad that got mentioned. Then you had Andre, Bossman, Demolition, Honky Tonk Man, Hercules, Perfect, DiBiase. Just an incredible cast of characters and colourful pants, leotards, tassels, and face paint. SummerSlam 89 sums up 80s WWF better than maybe any other pay-per-view from the time for me. I still love it. To top it all off, you had Tony Schiavone and Jesse the Body being an awesome double act on commentary.
I will say, I do love that Brainbusters Heart Foundation match. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And it's nice to see that the love for that.
The six-man? I love that match.
I'll say less about the six-man involving Duggan and Demolition. Yeah.
Not so good.
He's right, Zeus was terrifying, but in my opinion, for completely different reasons.
I like 89. I think, for personal opinion, I think I prefer 88 to 89.
Oh, 88's terrible!
I don't know. I like 88.
I like 88.
Main event, Macho Man.
Oh, that five-star classic. What how many stars did Meltzer give that? Crighty from UK Fan Forum. Fully Loaded 2000.
My name.
Yeah. Fully Loaded 2000. Two match of the year contenders in Rock Benoit and Triple H Jericho. Decent undercard too. TNA and Trish versus the Hardys and Lee. It was a very good opener. Then there's the genuine holy shit moment when Rikishi's splash off the cage onto Val Venus. This show sums up the year perfectly. Fully Loaded 2000. What do you think, folks?
Yep, already mentioned it in that tandem of shows.
2000 in general.
There's a lot of great offerings.
It's a good pay-per-view year for the WWF. Not so much for the other two companies, but for WWF, it's a good pay-per-view year. The Jericho Triple H match, whilst being a good match, the wrong guy goes over.
Kurt Angle Taker.
It's an okay match. I don't think it's anything to write home about. But again, for me, the wrong guy goes over. Rikishi Val Venus. Val Venus is a real trooper for taking that big splash from the top, but it's okay. It's not great. But
I never understood why Val Venus was Intercontinental Champion in 2000.
It's a good card, but I think much like the Bash at the Beach 96 reference earlier, I think it's a good card, but there are better during the year.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, we I covered the Fully Loaded 2000 and the 2000 Gun Band the Ugly podcast about why I liked that show.
I just agree with Carl on this one. I mean, I love Jericho and Triple H, but it does sour you. Whether rightly or wrongly, it sours you when the wrong guy goes over.
Yeah, because the thing with that show is the narrative was like, it's the triple main event, it's their current stars against the guys who are coming up against, you know, Rock, Benoit, Triple H, Jericho, Taker, Angle, and the future of the company went 0-3, and 6 months later, that was not looking like a good idea. Bill Thompson from Pro Wrestling Only, one that I think is often overlooked is One Night Only from 1997, which had only a couple of mediocre matches, a good tag match, three match of the year contenders in Duel of Triple H, Taker versus Bret, and Vader versus Owen, as well as a HBK Bulldog match that I think is okay, but a lot of others love.
Did you go to this, Lee?
I was here live for One Night Only. I was the only person cheering for Shawn Michaels with a penis. And I think the show is excellent. I don't think that Dude Love Triple H is a match of the year contender. It's a very, very good match, but I wouldn't say match of the year contender. And I think that Shawn and Bulldog was fucking fantastic.
The European title.
European match.
Yeah, fucked him.
when Sean decided he didn't want to do a job.
I want a belt.
One of the many times. Really good show. Great crowd. The Tiger Alley single leaf Cassidy match, not so much. But
I'm going to a bit more detail on the Shawn Bulldog thing.
Bulldog thing.
To give an honest view of Shawn Michaels.
Okay, alright.
For the show. A fair and balanced.
Let's give a fair
view.
And balanced. Well, in this weird middle ground, the crowd was so completely Bulldog. I mean, they were blowing. Yeah, they had the bulldog flags. They were blowing the
didn't
horns.
Bulldog like,
bulldog.
Bulldog.
Bulldog
changed his name.
Bulldog.
Didn't bulldog dedicate the match?
Bulldog.
Like, swear he's gonna win the match.
He said
he vowed
to win the belt for his dying sister. And then, because the plan was he was going to go home, and Shawn Michaels said, it's more important that, I win the belt here. So, I think Vince kind of talked Bulldog into doing it by saying, no, we'll do a rematch and you'll get it back in Manchester, don't worry. Meanwhile, Shawn Michaels is just, getting ready to hump the British flag.
And shortly after, Bulldog did change his name to Bulldog.
Bulldog!
Trademark. Yeah.
It was a great environment live. I don't think they ever showed this on the pay-per-view, but the end of the show when Hunter and Shawn are climbing up the Titantron to basically just kind of, lollygag in front of the fans, and the fans are throwing glass bottles at both of them trying to knock them off because they had so much heat. It was an awesome visual, and it was a great main event, I thought, even if he probably wasn't the ideal finish. Mr. LaSalle from Pro Wrestling Only, I absolutely love Great American Bash 92. It was just presented so seriously and like an actual sporting event, no bullshit, and featured my favourite match of all time, Vader, with the most decisive victory for a rule breaker over a top fan favourite I had seen. I used to have a vast VHS collection of wrestling tapes, and I used to work with this guy to whom I'd loan tapes. He flipped over Great American Bash 92, loved Barry Windham, the officiating, the commentary, and said it made the WWF seem so silly in comparison. This is Vader winning the WCW title for the first time by murderizing Sting in the main event.
Yeah, that's sick.
Crossface Chicken Wing from Pro Wrestling Only said, Spring Stampede 94, that poor bastard from Pro Wrestling Only, Spring Stampede 94. WWF Chili from the UK fan forum said, Spring Stampede 94 is absolutely the bollocks. there's a lot of good things on this show. Cactus and Max Payne versus the Nasty Boys in the awesome street fight. Sting and Rude have a pretty good match. Dustin Rhodes and Bunkhouse Buck in the Bunkhouse match, which is a bloodbath and a fantastic match. Very underrated match, really good. Vader and the Boss Man have a great big man match, and it's headlined by Flair and Steamboat in the main event. This was one that actually came up quite a bit, like I mentioned, in terms of the great WCW pay-per-views. Spring Stampede 94 was kind of in a bit of a middle of a weird time, but a hell of a show.
When you've got a main event of Flair Steamboat, that's never going to disappoint. When you genuinely care about what's happening during a match which involves Max Payne, you know the night's going well. I think I've mentioned before on previous podcasts my love for Vader and the Boss Man. I don't know how many matches they've had. I don't think there's been that many.
Nah.
But I always found them enjoyable.
I think we commented on that before. It was strange that, as you said at the time, they were negotiating with Hogan, whilst for at least a few months anyway they're having like some of the best shows.
Great
that they were ever doing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Hogan arrived,
fucking hit the skids.
Yeah.
Asmo from TPWW forums, just because I rewatched it over the weekend, I'll say Money in the Bank 2011. This is what Carl referenced earlier on, the CM Punk show. This
let's call it what it is.
Well, you know what though, again, much in the vein of Canadian Stampede, and actually it's a very good comparison because of the local element to the main event, the long main event. Less matches on the card, but every match was really good, or at least served its purpose in an incredibly effective way. Daniel Bryan wins Money in the Bank.
Yeah,
Alberto Del Rio wins the Raw money back when he had a little bit of momentum. Mark Henry and Big Show were short and painless, and it was an injury angle done very well. Christian wins the world title by being kicked in the balls, and another one of his great matches with Randy Orton. Yeah. Excellent series of matches. And then in the main event, what can you say? That all the buzz about CM Punk that was going on at the time, about, you know, was he actually going to leave? We don't believe he's really going to leave with the belt, but wouldn't it be cool if they did? And then the match was superb, the execution of the angle at the end. Again, that whole thing of looking at it in the big picture does dock some points, but as a standalone pay-per-view and for, again, emotion, how you watched it at the time, this one does rank pretty damn high.
Yeah, turns out to be not as significant as we all thought it was going to be at the time, maybe, but after coming off to the back of the Punk promo. Similar to the ECW choice by EG, at the time, one of the best, pure enjoyable 3-hour shows, loved it.
Yeah. Everything about it was so on point.
Brian winning just kind of set the tone for later on as well in retrospect. Yeah. It was just, really, really enjoyable show. Historically, probably not as significant as it should have been, really. It could have been. It's a debate for another day. But as a standalone show, absolutely loved the show. Yeah.
Just, I agree with everything you've said there. It was a really enjoyable show. I'm not shocked that it has been sort of brought up in the conversation. But just as a question for you three guys, would it be fair to say that the company haven't put on a better pay-per-view since?
Ooh. Oh, I'd have to go and look, to be honest. Off the top of my head, no idea.
That's fair enough. But I mean, to me, to sort of that point, when it was mentioned and you sort of talked about it there, I sat there and thought, one doesn't spring to mind.
It'd be up there, but I can't think of anything probably that beats it. But I'd probably close second behind SummerSlam for me. Really enjoyed the show. I think historical significance of how they fucked up the Punk return and everything afterwards.
I remember enjoying the show at the time, but to be honest, the only things I do remember from it is Brian winning the briefcase and Punk winning at the end. That's the only things I really remember. I know that there was a Christian Randy Orton feud at the time, and it was a great feud.
They were every pay per view, it was great.
But I don't remember that specific match. I don't remember the details of it, and I don't give a shit about Del Rio. So for me, it's just I only remember it for two reasons. But at the time, I remember loving the show absolutely.
We've got a few left to go. We're going to try and get through these. Don Peterson, I'm going to say Invasion. This one I wasn't expecting to crop up. It didn't live up to the hype. Well, that's not a good way to start. but the fact it had WWF, WCW, and ECW all on one card, and the fact that it happened in Cleveland, where he lives, made it one of my favourites. Invasion. I don't think this holds up as the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view, although it did the best buy rate of a non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time.
Yeah, was it 770,000 North
775.
American? 775. I think it's telling there that he mentioned the fact that it was in Cleveland and he was there. And as we've sort of referenced previously throughout the podcast, that I think that does help when you're looking back. You look back more fondly if you were there and you experienced it live. I can imagine why that would be sort of high in your rankings. But it's one of those where people sort of get caught up in the emotion, sort of the fantasy booking. You know, we'd all had the magazines as a kid, and they'd do the dream matches, and people were going in with that sort of that mentality. So I think that probably inflates it. I don't think it's a great card, in truth. I think the main event's fun. I was never a big fan of the Austin joining the Alliance personally, but I thought it was an enjoyable match. Van Damme Hardy.
There we go.
It's a very good match for showcasing RVD.
In terms of post-show buzz, I've been very rarely as excited as I was when Van Damme had his first WWE match, and it ended up not being a clusterfuck.
Similar to many instances like the Shawn return or these, you know, personal vested interest.
Yeah.
Let's show the world. And he was great. And I think for me, this show will always be sullied by the fuck up of the
whole angle.
Before and after it,
they dropped the ball two or three times before this, and they would fucking throw the rock off a cliff after this.
I liked it. Can't wait to see how Rob Van Damme's going to perform. God, I hope they let him do the Van Damminator, because that's his main move. Maybe if I watch it back, it has been a while, I'll admit. If I watch it back, I would probably where it holds up very well. But I just remember when I watched it at the time, I really loved that show. I really enjoyed seeing the people like Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo on there, because I'd watched them on WCW, so I know it wasn't the perfect WCW versus WWF that we wanted, but there was enough there that I found enjoyable, highlighted by, as you said, Rob Van Dam having a really great match with Jeff Hardy. I don't think Austin should have joined the Alliance. I do think that was a mistake, but I just thought it was a fun show. I enjoyed it.
It was a fun show, but I think to Kieran's point, it will have the stigma of everything that surrounded it at the time. I always look at the Invasion pay-per-view in the sense of, like we've mentioned before, they dropped the ball a couple of times beforehand. This was the one chance to sort of recapture that lost ground, regain that lost steam. And to me, Austin joining the Alliance really sort of killed the angle.
Yeah.
It's just, it is the WWF guy. Okay, this is just a stable feud.
Once
you've done this, it's now become just an angle. I don't think, personally, I think if I really sat down and thought about it, I wouldn't put it in the top 10 in company history of pay-per-views. May seem a bit harsh to others, I don't know, but I think if I sat down and really thought about it, I could find 10 other better pay-per-views that the company have put on.
Yeah. Mando from Pro Wrestling Only, I'd place a vote for Great American Bash 1919 New Revolution. The Southern Boys versus the Midnight Express tag is one of my all-time favourite tag matches. The show-ending finish and celebration is still a blast, this being Sting winning the WCW Championship finally from Ric Flair.
Good match.
And I do love the Midnight Express Southern Boys tag. That is fucking brilliant.
I think it's certainly one of my favourites.
Okay, but in terms of overall card, I can't really make the case for the Bash compared to some of these other shows. It was a show with a few highlights sprinkled in.
Yeah, no, I agree. Some great moments, but again, looking at best.
Yeah, Horseman v Dudes with Attitudes.
Dudes with Attitudes.
You know, Vader murderizes Tom Zenk in his debut. That's some nice stuff.
Yay!
JP Chicago from Pro Wrestling Only. I'll be the lone vote on this one, but I vote for Survivor Series 96. Bret versus Austin is an all-time great match. Taker and Mankind is solid. The tags were all pretty fun. Had the debuts of Furnace and Lafarn, Flash Funk and The Rock, and the main event with Shawn and Sid delivered. Another great thing was the crowd being as hot as they were. The show really felt like the start of a new era.
The show really benefits from that, in particular the main event benefits from that that rowdy New York crowd, let's say, that
they're just more avid.
Absolutely turned on Michaels, which kind of warmed the cockles of my heart a little
bit. Did it warm your cockles that they did it in favour of Sid?
Well, no one's perfect. Listen, you know, we've all got our issues. Bret Austin is a fantastic match. Taker Mankind.
Not
that it wasn't the best. It was a bad match.
I think that was paying you as a Mick Foley staunch defender
Mick Foley is a staunch defender, and as a man who has said on more than one occasion, breathed new life into the Undertaker character at a time when he was incredibly stale. But I don't think that's a good match. The first tag match, I think, is good with Furnace and Lafon. You know, it's just a shame the way that they really did peak too early with the debut, and it was all downhill from there. The other matches on the card, I know you've got Rocky Maivia's debut, the Blue Chipper, but that wasn't a good match. And when we're going back to the match of the fake Diesel. With a fake Razor in that one?
Fake Razor, fake Diesel, Farouk and Vader against the real Rogues Gallery babyface team of Flash Funk, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, from, you know, dust the mothballs off of him, Savio Vega, and about an 800-pound Yokozuna.
The groan in the background there that you heard from Chase sums up that match perfectly. Yeah.
I will say that the main event of this show infuriated me as a Shawn Michaels fan. I was going to my first WWF show. This won't be a long tangent, don't worry. I was going to my first WWF show about a week after this. Looking forward to seeing the WWF champ Shawn Michaels, my favourite wrestler of all time. Sid wins the belt and then headlines my house show against Farouk in a match that goes 90 seconds because he can't do anything.
Damn!
Because he fucking sucks. So thank you very much, New York fans. No. Razma Jazz from TPW Forums again, we'll blow through these final ones. Anarchy Rules 99.
Anarchy Rules 99 I'm going to be biased towards, because as stated in the previous podcast with ECW, that was my first ECW pay-per-view that I ever watched, so I have huge nostalgia over it. So I completely agree with him on that one. I do love that show. Rob Van Dam, Balls Mahoney in the main event, which is actually a really good match.
That was a really shockingly good match.
Yeah, it was.
And just even other stuff, even if it's like stupid little stuff where it's like Simon Diamond on there and stuff like that. I know there's like people
Stupid, and Simon Diamond yeah, summed that up nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. I just enjoyed it. I just enjoyed it. It was my first ECW pay-per-view, so I just loved it from beginning to end. The triple threat with Taz, Tanaka and Mike Awesome.
It's another one of those shows where I feel like we have to mention the crowd again, because of the way
Chicago, let's keep that in mind.
It's Chicago. It's the largest attended ECW show in the company's history, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. There's a house show in Mississauga that was close, but I think that's the record.
Because there's over 6,000 out at the Odeon?
Yeah.
Or Odyssey? I forget the name now. But the crowd were hot. You've got the issue of Taz leaving the company. Everyone knows he's leaving the company, so you've got the crowd reacting to that.
Fuck you, Taz.
Fuck you, Taz. Yeah. Obviously, they reacted to Awesome returning to the company, and the start of his title run, and his feud with feud with Tanaka, which was, when you look back now and you think about how much damage it must have done to them, but it was still fun to watch at the time. It's not my problem, and no one can tell me they didn't enjoy watching those car wrecks. Yeah. But I think Balls RVD's romanticised a little bit. I mean, you've even got the crowd in attendance chanting on several occasions, "We can't see shit." And it really takes a bit of the lustre off the match for me.
It works better as a TV match, and I'm sure it did as a live match.
So as an in-ring show, did you prefer that over One Night Only?
One Night Stand. In-ring only, we're talking about.
In-ring only.
That's an interesting topic.
I'm weakening his argument. He's genius.
Because obviously it has the benefit of having a Rob Van Dam match. Rob Van Dam, Balls Mahoney was very good. The triple threat with Tajiri was very good. Mike Awesome, Taz, Tanaka was very good. But then he had like angles like was it Raven, Tommy Dreamer versus Rhino and Carino, which wasn't really anything. Sabu, Credible was okay, but not probably as good considering what the two were doing.
That's a bit of a surprise. I was pleasantly surprised by that match, actually.
And was it Jerry Lynn, Lance Storm at the beginning? Yeah, that was a good match. Yeah, so there's four good matches on that show.
Just admit it, Chase, it was a better card.
Probably equal.
That's close.
Has anyone mentioned Rumble 2000?
No, and that's something I was actually going to get to.
Sorry.
No, we can get to it after this. But SummerSlam 2000, fantastic show. Very much the epitome of the year 2000 in terms of everything just being in its proper place. Benoit and Jericho 2 out of 3 falls. The first TLC match. Rock, Angle, Triple H, even if it was in the triple match, which was actually a very good match, but unfortunately Kurt Angle
knocked himself out.
Yeah, knocked himself out.
Rikishi versus Right to Center at the start of the show.
Very fun match. Yeah,
fun match.
They managed to make you care about Steve Blackman.
Steve Blackman, Shane McMahon. There's just a lot of good stuff on this pay per view.
Yeah, it's a really, really good show.
I know we're going to get to the Rumble, but I would argue it's probably between SummerSlam and the Rumble for best card of 2000.
Backlash,
pretty damn close. I'm
Backlash.
I think I would lean towards both of the other two over Backlash.
I'm going to pick Raw Rumble, but Backlash.
I really like Backlash. It's got the hot crowd.
Judgment Day is great as well. It's not
Judgment
Day,
but I would. Well, it goes back to that point about how good a year it was.
Yeah, it really was the best year in the year 2000 for WWF. Yeah, and since we didn't actually mention it, and no one actually voted for, which stunned me, what I was actually going to pick, I picked the AAA pay-per-view for my own personal pick, more out of the fact that this was a very, you know, lauded pay-per-view that no one mentioned, but in my own opinion, Royal Rumble 2000 is the equivalent of your One Night Stand or whatever, in terms of a show that just was absolutely, felt like it was just completely on point at the right time, with Taz's great debut, the Hardys and the Dudleys and the tables match, which pretty much set the scene for what they would do for the next couple of years. The making of Triple H in the street fight with Cactus Jack. The reason I love this show so much and think that it holds a lot of merit is because not only was it great in terms of, you know, the awesome debut of Taz, the very fun tables match, the classic street fight, fairly average Rumble, but everything on the show set up the rest of the year so perfectly, yeah. In the sense of you could tell, okay, Kurt Angle's going to be a big deal. The Hardys and the Dudleys are going to be linked in this style of wrestling. Triple H was made on this show. He was ice cold. I shouldn't say ice cold, but he was a very cold heel champion, yeah. Before he got the feud with Cactus. Yeah. And The Rock went from matches with the New Age Outlaws and throwing Davey Boy in dog shit to actually being the lead babyface.
Yeah, and don't forget the revitalization of Mick Foley as well, because he'd been doing quite poor performances by his own admission throughout most of 99, and then even if it was for a small time period he got back on form, yeah, again.
You don't see many union matches on his best of DVDs, Carl.
Yeah. Hardy's and Dudley's table match I actually prefer over most of the TLCs that they did. Cactus Jack, it's the first time I ever saw anything like that. I said I hadn't seen ECW yet, and I just was getting back into WWF. This was Royal Rumble 2000 was the first pay-per-view I watched live, getting back.
It was the first Channel 4, and again, yeah. that does play a lot into my own personal opinion, because it was such a hot topic at school, and just, it was just like everybody was talking about it. It's like that kind of impact, you know, in my own little world, my own little bubble, made this show mean a great deal because of the coverage.
Everyone at school was talking about it before and after, and it was just a thing where I had to watch it, and it was just like, okay, getting back into wrestling, this is the first live show I can watch, and I hadn't seen
what
a table.
Great show to
absolutely, and it still stays with me, the fact it's in my top three, but it's just that was the first table match or anything like that I've ever seen, and so for me, like, as you'd say, with Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon at WrestleMania 10, with the ladder match still being like a favourite ladder match for me, that was the first tables match or any kind of hardcore match I saw.
You can all be so cruel about Mick Foley when you're sober. It really hurts. but this pay-per-view, to go back, has some... It's got a lot of great sort of ingredients, if you like. You've got the Madison Square Garden crowd again. Notice that common theme. Mm. Some really good matches on there, I think. The Rumble match is average. It's not bad, but it's average. But I think the Street Fight is fantastic, and like you say, helps make Triple H.
And we got the final suggestion here from the great Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge. I'm biased because I was there, but I'll say King of the Ring 1998. Beyond the moment everyone remembers, there was a lot of other great action in that match. The tournament matches were exciting, culminating with Shamrock winning. It still seemed like they might push him tremendously. And the main event with Austin's first world title loss was compelling and historic. Incredibly, there's a lot of hipsters on the web who now revisionist bash the Attitude Era, but cards like this show how incredible it was at its best. We had a little bit of the Attitude Era revisionism on the last podcast. I think it was Bill Thompson who mentioned that 95% of that stuff, when you go back and look at it, is hogwash, which is the comment that you objected to, Chase. But King of the Ring 1998, in terms of all-time best non-WrestleMania pay-per-views, what do you think?
I can understand why they would give Ken Shamrock the King of the Ring, but as being a Rock fan, obviously I'm going to be a bit biased towards that.
Chat my ass too.
Yeah, you know, it's obviously which one of the two was going to be the real star.
Well, this is the thing, and I will say here, because he mentioned, he was there live in Pittsburgh, which...
Yeah, that does make a difference.
What a great show to go to, by the way.
Just the Hell in a Cell.
But after the show, after that pay-per-view, because I remember going on holiday the next day, and I couldn't stop thinking about this pay-per-view the day after it happened. We stayed up to watch it, me and Kieran, and just like we were on the plane, and we couldn't stop thinking about this pay-per-view. Not just the Foley stuff either, but the shock value of Austin losing title to Kane,
which
was actually that, and that was one of the best aspects of that match. Was it was kind of a, you can't really, obviously Kane's not going to set himself on fire, but at the same time, it was really hard to conceive that Austin was not going to win, that was not going to retain the belt, because he was the man. He was so popular back then. He was the guy. And it was just, again, when that show was finished, there was a great buzz about it. I don't think in terms of, like, you know, top to bottom enjoyment, it holds up to some of the other ones we've talked about here today. But certainly a good contender in terms of the feeling you got after the show was finished when you watched it live.
I guess so, because obviously it's right in the middle of that 98 year, which was obviously when WWF was really starting to get hot. And I guess it does have more selling points than just the Mick Foley match. I mean, you know, Ken Shamrock winning, I guess, was obviously just a new direction. I mean, I know we had, you know, in the previous 2 years, we had Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Austin win the King of the Ring.
We had like four heels in a row with the King of the Ring.
Yeah, but before that, you know, we had like Mabel and stuff like that, and I'm sure that was still a sour taste in everybody's mouth. Though, I believe there were better 98 pay-per-views than King of the Ring.
Final thoughts in terms of your actual final... We've discussed so many different pay-per-views. A lot of different arguments have been made in terms of ranking them or putting them in certain tiers or where they really truly rank. So many different ones have been discussed. To go around the table right now, and I'll throw it to the other side of the table first, your final pick for the best non-WrestleMania pay-per-view of all time. Let's hear it. What do you think?
Well, I think I gave a real yeoman's effort in defending Canadian Stampede. But let's be brutally honest about it. All it was a good effort on my part. I was thinking going with SummerSlam 2002. Kieran beat me. And he's doing his best Kevin Nash impression with the face he's pulling right now. Kieran beat me to it. I think before we even started the podcast, it was always likely to win, if we're being brutally honest. So that gets my vote.
I was right from the beginning. Yeah, it was. For the record, I did ask Liam and asked Liam what all the guys have picked. No one said SummerSlam 2002. So
that's because I hadn't picked yet.
Yeah, me either. So basically, you're going SummerSlam 2002. You're sticking to your guns.
I'll stick to my guns, baby.
Carl, you're sticking to Kieran's gun.
I'll hold my hands up and say that Kieran's selection was the best.
Yeah, okay. G, are you sticking with One Night Stand after all this?
Well, what are you going to go with first?
A man of conviction, a man who says Anarchy Rules 99 is actually a better card than the one he picked himself. What are you picking first? Just say SummerSlam.
In the words of Randy Savage, Chase, be a man.
This will be a bit of a cop-out answer. My head says SummerSlam 2002. My heart says Royal Rumble 2000.
No. Make a pick.
If it's purely the best. Oh, okay, Royal Rumble 2000. I've made my pick. There you go.
You didn't even pick your own pick.
No.
Technically, as well, I brought up Royal Rumble as well, so actually you agreed with my.
No, that doesn't count.
It's alright, no, yeah, about
we get one each. Like I said, my pick was more for historical significance, but I don't think that. I don't believe. And I said at the time, I don't believe it's the best non-WrestleMania pay per view of all time after I've seen it. So it was more that I felt it needed to be mentioned and brought up in the discussion than anything else. My own personal pick will be. Oh, it's so far. This is the problem. When we're actually talking about like which ones we're going to pick, it's so hard to whittle it down to one, at least for me. Because as good as SummerSlam 2002 is, and it is, the when we get into the top tier, the quality is really, really high. When we're talking about Canadian Stampede, Money in the Bank 2011, SummerSlam 2000, Rumble 2000, SummerSlam 2002, these pay-per-views are so damn good that on any given day, I could probably switch my opinion.
I guess it just comes down to that personal little trigger in your head. Yeah, and you say for 2000.
And it all comes down, like you said, that the only different, the only factor that really separates it is that little trickle of nostalgia for whatever given moment I have at that time. So really, Royal Rumble 2000 for me.
God, it's a good choice. Good choice for Rumble 2000. The good thing about this podcast is actually how many actually reminded me of how many good pay-per-views there are. I mean, like I said, Raw Rumble 2000 was always on my mind as well as being like in my top three. Also like little ones that we've mentioned, like American Bash 89.
Yeah.
Actually being surprised when I think about it, I go, yeah, American Bash 89 was really good. Same with American Bash 96. I really enjoyed almost anything from like 2000. We've already stated I'm gonna stick with my pick. If anyone asks me what my favorite pay-per-view is, I'm always going to say ECW One Night Stand. Even after, like, it was just straight off the bat or whatever, I think about it, it's always going to be ECW One Night Stand. I can concede to Kieran that 2002 SummerSlam is a good choice, but just from my heart, it's always going to be ECW One Night Stand.
So basically, anyone who's folded and shown their inner weakness is Carl.
Yeah, we're stronger people over on this
no.
side.
No. You're all
down that glass ball, Carl.
You're all just fucking stubborn, and I at least had the honesty. I had the honesty to admit that I think Kieran's selection was better than mine. But to Liam's point, sort of joking aside, it is really tough to pick the best one of all time. Personally speaking, much like Liam, the answer could change on a different day.
Yeah. I'm kind of regretting my pick already, to be honest.
Because there are so many good ones when you get into that top bracket. My answer could change. I mean, I texted Liam my suggestion for this podcast, and I think it was about 10:30 at night, and it had been raised to me at about 9:30 in the morning, which shows how long I'd spent throughout the day agonising over it. So it just goes to show how difficult a decision it is to make.
It is very tough. I want to thank everybody for listening to this absolute odyssey of a podcast. So, thank you very much. Again, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, email to scgradio@hotmail.com if you wish. For G. John Chase.
I'm a huge fan of the British Bulldog.
For Carl Jones.
The
pleasure was all yours.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
Laters.
This is Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here.
I know your every move. I've heard your every word. I know you well. And I've got nothing left to prove. Your threats I find absurd. I am your hell. Every time you think that I'm done, I'll come back.